Welcome to 21 Grams Speaks, the podcast where I, Dennis, the creator of 21 Grams, chat with my talented friends about a wide range of topics from mental health, addiction, and recovery to religion and politics. We dive into honest conversations to broaden our perspectives and share them with you. Thank you for joining us as we explore the complexities of these subjects, bringing you thought-provoking insights. I'm Dennis, your host, and this is 21 Grams Speaks. What's up, guys? Welcome back to 21 Grams Speaks. We're here with Tara, who is a licensed therapist, and we're talking everything mental health, addiction, empathy, compassion, family, and trauma. So before the break, we were kind of discussing generational trauma and how you may not have experienced, you know, something ultra traumatic while you were a child, but maybe it was just emotional neglect, physical neglect, things that might not be looked at as all that dramatic. But the idea of being told, hey, you know, you fall on your bike, just rub some dirt in it. Boys aren't supposed to cry. Girls are supposed to wear dresses. This is how this is. This is how this is. Can lead to mental health. And before the break, I was just discussing, you know, the generation prior to us and the baby boomers and why it is that you think that they're a lot more cold or a lot more the opposite of empathetic towards people, whatever that word is.
I don't know. You know, I mean, the boomers are the boomers. Right. I think, you know, a big part of it is how they were raised. You know, I mean, we can't let go of, you know, before the boomers is the silent generation?
The silent generation.
World War One or something like that. So like, I don't think that our
World
our
War
parents,
One. Wow. Yeah.
I don't think that our parents were raised with much of their own empathy, of their own understanding, of their own compassion. You know, they didn't get the attention that they needed. You know, it was funny. I was listening to TikTok this morning, as I do when I dissociate. I just scroll through. And somebody made a good point about, like, there's two big things about the boomers of why they're the boomers, and like went into this whole thing about lead poisoning. And I was like, I don't know enough about that, but like, you know, that's a big part of it. But also that they were just not raised with, you know, they didn't even, the silent generation didn't even pay attention to their kids, like at all. Like,
well, they were labor. Like, they were just looked at as labor, or, you know, especially if you lived in rural areas, you were just a farmhand. I mean, sure, I'm sure some parents love their kids, but it was, and that's why there's such a huge decline in the birth rate per family, because, and I'm a big fan of geopolitics and how things work in the world. And one of the things is there's a decline in childbirth, and the reason why is because everyone moved off the farms and into the suburbs or into the city, and you no longer need these. The kids aren't assets. They're actual money, like their mouths to feed and all of these things. So it's just different. You have to really want kids a lot more now than before, where you had kids
because exactly
their labor. And
that's exactly it. Is like they're that's all the boomers know, is they were raised to just work, do the things that their parents needed them to do. They had no boundaries. They had no, like, there's no nurturing. There's no like gentle parenting or anything like that. It's just you go work and then you go get your shit done and whatever. And that's how they were raised. And so they expect that that's how they're going to raise their own kids, you know?
Sure.
It's like, I can't. You know, it's funny when I talk to my dad now, and he's, you know, thinking of, and we think about generational trauma and stuff like that. And like, just like childhood neglect. It's like, well, how can I expect my dad to know how to meet my needs when he never had those needs met for him as a kid? Like, he didn't even know that that was a thing, you know?
It's like and asking so someone to write a book report on a book they never read.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, how could they even know that they're failing us, you know, if they never were given those skills? They were never, it would never happen with them. And then they were never told, like, hey, maybe there's a different way that you could raise these kids, you know? And so there's just this stark difference now that you see, like, millennials now that are raising their kids, and they're raising Gen Z and Gen A to be totally different.
Totally.
Because we're now reacting to what we didn't get. It's like, you know, emotional nurturing and like meeting emotional needs is a thing that we need for like healthy mental health, you know, like good relationships and good self-image and self-worth. And we got to figure that out ourselves. So that's why you see most of the millennials in therapy.
Yeah.
Right. That even reflects my caseload. Is like, I would say that my caseload is, I do have a few boomers in there, and I have a few, well, I don't know, what's the age range of boomers, but I've got like some 70s people in there. Yeah. And then it's mostly like young 20s to like 38, 40 years old, you know? It's like, here we are. We're all trying to undo the wounds or heal the wounds that our parents like inadvertently, you know, gave us. And here we are. And then you have Gen Z that are just like, therapy is just like eating another meal. Like, I'm not going to not be in therapy. And it's not even for healing wounds. It's just for like self-growth, you know?
It's funny that you say that. You've created a lot more compassion in me towards that generation. And you explained it in such a way that like resonates and makes sense. I mean, the silent generation treated their kids as basically slave labor, and they probably didn't like that. So they made a slight change and they raised us, or, you know, people a little bit older than us, but the next generation in a little bit different of a way than they wanted to be treated. And then we raise our kids to avoid the quote unquote, I'm not going to be like my mom. I'm not going to be like my dad. So the things that we absolutely hated, we'll change those when we raise our kids, or we'll lean into it. Like, there's times that families generations don't break those chains or those gaps and everything like that. And it keeps going, and their cycle keeps going and going and going. But for the most part, I feel like there is this sense of evolution that happens emotionally and mentally over time. So the way you explained it makes me feel a little less resentment. I don't know, like more compassionate towards the older generation, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I still have my resentments. Like, I'm sitting here thinking about it. I'm like, my biggest thing with the boomers and boomer parents is I don't understand why. I do understand why, and I don't understand why they have to meet every problem with more punishment. Like, everything is just like harsher, you know? It's, you know, I got spanked and I'm fine, so I want you, you know, so I'm going to spank my kid. Or I had student loans, I had to pay those things, so you should have to pay them too. It's like, there's something missing around like the empathy piece of it. And I really think that they didn't get enough empathy, grace, and understanding in their, you know, as they were being raised, to know that, hey, you don't have to punish everything. Everything doesn't have to be painful. Everything doesn't have to be angry and like, you know, negative all the time. And what if we actually tried to, you know, go at this with love and care and empathy and respect versus, you know, just hit them harder or punish them longer, ground them forever, take everything away from them, you know?
Keep filling up the prisons, keep doing this. Yeah. And it's funny that you say that, because it feels that way sometimes, in the sense that, you know, the generation that thinks that everyone younger than them is entitled, in my experience, are the most entitled people ever. They think, oh, well, I had to pay for my student loans. Sure, it was $25 a month, and yours is $6,000. This is a gross over, you know,
over. Not that thing. Much like, over.
Yeah, but like, compared to mine. Well, how come How come you're not buying a house? How come? And their brain will not, like, it refuses to connect that things are not the same now as they were before. An example of this is, well, I won't say an example of this because I don't want to bring my family into it, but let's just say that back in their generation, somebody that I know was able to get a job right at 18. There was a job that they had for 40 years that paid them really good, and they were able to retire from a company. And they were able to be a single income home. They were able to buy their home, have cars, their kids grew up in good school districts, all of these things, where a single income family now is, it's impossible. There's absolutely no way that that could work. People are not buying homes. It's just not the same. But in their mind, their standard 40-hour work week is what they think could pay the bills now, when realistically, if you say, man, I'm broke, I can't buy, well, work harder, work more hours, work more, work more, work more. They don't understand that these people are working themselves to death, and it's greedy corporations that refuse to pay them. And if you were to ask a boomer, like, hey, or you'll hear this, like, oh, well, they're just not, they're not getting paid because they're not working that hard. And my first thing is, okay, if that's the situation, then if you're working for a company, do you think that the CEO of that company is working 400 times harder than you every single day? Because on average, they're getting paid 400 times more. So in your theory, these people are working, if you're working 40 hours a week, what's 400 times 40? That's how many hours a week
Hours
that
a
they're,
week.
but there doesn't matter, because they'll squirm out of it. Oh, well, just work harder, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. And it's like, why are you siding with the people that are putting us into slavery, wage slavery, instead of the actual people living this? Like,
But it's the same thing, right? It's they will always just resort to blaming us for it, without looking at how the circumstances have changed, but changed, and that it's just inaccessible at this point. But they will blame us because they were blamed. Anything that happened bad in their life, like, was a result of choices they made or didn't make, where, the resources that were out there were was nothing like it is for us. So they see it and go like, well, just like they say, well, I had to pay my loans, or I did this and it was fine. It's like, you're not looking at how drastically different everything is. And you're still blaming us for things because, I mean, it's a very unsophisticated defense mechanism to just to place blame on something and not, hold in the environment, the systems accountable. It's like, well, the system worked for me, so why isn't it working for you? I don't know,
Because you're
because it's
lazy.
fucked. Yeah, exactly. It's
Because you're
fucked.
lazy. Okay, well, I'm not going to make it to Christmas, Thanksgiving, because I have to work those days because it's time and a half. Oh, well, you can't be with the family. Oh, there's all, it's never good enough. And I want to, just for the people listening to this, I'm not singling with this portion of the conversation, since we've been talking about specifically the mental health stuff. I'm not just relating it to boomers. There's still people our age that think that in this way, that's just so ignorant.
Yeah,
That
it
they're
is.
ignorant, and they'll side with they'll side with huge companies that constantly rip people off and treat their employees like shit, before they will side with the people that are live next door that are getting ripped off for their labor. Or, but I mean, that the bigger picture isn't even the people that agree with it. It's, this was supposed to happen. We're a capitalist country, so there's an end result to capitalism, and we're there. It's where all of the rich people get all of the money, and all of the poor people have no money. And this was, it was designed this way. So if we're
It
shocked at
is.
all, then we shouldn't be, because this is, if you and I had $100 between us, you had 50, I had 50, you sold something for a dollar, I gave you 51, I have 49. You do that 50 times, you have all of the money, I have none of the money. That's how it works. That's how it works.
That's exactly it. And in the process of all of the, you know, rich people taking all of the money, all of the assets, all of everything, they're selling us this idea that they're only a few steps away. You're only a few steps away from becoming one of us. You know, you just work a little harder, put a little bit more effort, or shoot this way, or do this, or, you know, sleep a little less and work a little more, and you too can become a ridiculous, you know, billionaire oligarch, you know, like me.
Right.
And which is so far from the truth. But but that's the psychological shit that they do, is they sell you on this idea, and many, many, many people believe it. And so they'll live their life going, I'm only one step away. The reality is you're one step away from homelessness, but you know, you're closer to homelessness than you are to a billionaire, but you know, keep, you know, just work a little bit harder.
The reason why you're so close to homelessness, because you're not showing up a half an hour early and working unpaid and staying a half, because if you do that, then the boss is going to see you and he's going to be like, oh, you deserve a promotion. Motherfucker, you're the last one that's going to get a promotion because you're easily manipulated.
Exactly.
And you're going to be the person that shows up a half an hour early to work for free. Like it's designed, and we're told since we're young, you know, oh, get a good job, they'll take care of you. And sure, having a good job is good, and being, if you're in a position where you can get paid a decent amount for your, in exchange for your labor, whatever it is, then sure, ultimately it would be nice for us to you know, own the means of our labor. Getting kind of lefty on the audience, but if we were able to have a stake in the company and not just pay peanuts while the CEOs keep on writing themselves checks for bonuses when they do absolutely nothing, then there would be a spread of wealth, and there would be lower crime rates, there would be lower all of the negative rates would be lower, because crime is going to be in poverty-stricken areas, and as those poverty-stricken areas grow and grow and grow, there's more crime, because fucking obviously.
Exactly. And it just is. It's just, for me, I'm very invested in like the psychological warfare that capitalism does to us, you know, in every facet of everything. It's not even just about like, you know, us against these big corporations. It's like, we are, you know, just like if we go into your workaholism, like being a workaholic is like, you are
ingrained.
This is the capitalist dream, right? It's like, you know, like just work harder. Everything is working towards something. Like if you rest, you're lazy. If you, you know, decide not to do something, you're lazy. Everything in your life is like, I got to just do more, a little bit more. In my personal growth journey, just a little bit more. Everything is focused on productivity and doing something. And if you're not doing something, then you're not making money or making someone else money. And so it makes sense that people are going to continue to just toil and toil and toil and work and work and work, because that's all we know. It's literally all we know. Like, capitalism tells us that we cannot survive unless we engage this system. And it's my favorite part of what I do, and why I love that I own my own business, because I have an anti-capitalist practice. Like my it is the foundation of what I do is anti-capitalist. And so people always ask me, well, how do you, you know, we have to live in capitalism. We have to live in it. So how are you doing this? Like, how are you being anti if you have to live in it? I'm like, it's, first of all, we need to shift over from like this obsession with profit. You know, it's like, do you have enough money to get your needs met? Then that's all that needs to matter, you know?
Right.
So, and also like this shift from having to do more and more and more and more, you know, all we need to do is, if we need to exist in capitalism, can we do it in the most gentle way possible? Can we cause the least amount of harm possible to ourselves, to our relationship, to my clients, you know, to whomever, you know, is that it doesn't have to be about more. It doesn't have to be about, you know, the next best thing, even though everything around us is telling us otherwise.
It's so ingrained. It's, capitalism is as American as baseball and apple pie. So when you live in a society like this, and we're constantly told, well, everyone's given the same exact opportunities. The people that make it to the top are the ones that work the hardest. You could be anything in America. It's the American dream. Anyone could be the president. You could be the president. We're told this our entire life, and it's horseshit. One, two, if you and I were born into a family that was Dole or Rockefeller or XYZ, the big family names, we're gonna have more of an advantage to be put into positions with a greater opportunity to quote unquote succeed in the way that it's sold compared to a black person that grows up in the inner city where there isn't a grocery store for 20 miles, but there's 20 liquor stores in that neighborhood. That person is going to have a way harder chance to get the same America, the same shot at the American dream. And if you tell someone that is extremely capitalistic minded, they will they can't see it that way. It's impossible, even though capitalism does not benefit them. It simply doesn't. And I get people all the time. There'll be people that will message me or email me after this podcast and be like, "Hey, aren't you a business owner? How come you're so anti-capitalism?" And it's not necessarily that I'm hard anti-capitalist. It's that, like you said, we live in a capitalist country, so you have to adapt. I'm not going to be the one
Figure
that
out,
starts
yeah.
any kind of socialist revolution. That's just I've got things going on, you know what I
Yeah.
mean? I
Yeah.
there's people that there's people that's the reason why there's one Martin Luther King. There's not a billion of them because that was his job at the time. Everyone's given a job, but I can, when people say that, I'll be like, well, that's the reason why I haven't hired anyone yet, because I'm not going to hire someone if I can't pay them properly or give them a stake in my business, which is the
Yeah.
plan that I have for someone that comes on. And I'll still get a Starbucks coffee every once in a while. I'll admit that. It's not like, and it's just that we live in that world. And right now I feel like it's even more so because we've switched our idolization from movie stars to billionaires. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos,
Bezos.
all of these people, we now idolize them even though they're ripping us off.
Yeah.
Every aspect of everything is a ripoff. And yeah, it's just wild. It's wild.
It's
And people will
wild.
defend this as they're just breaking off bread to give to these people, like, and they'll defend it. To me, it just doesn't make sense.
It
Like,
does not calculate, yeah.
no.
And it's so insidious how it happens too, because apart just like capitalism is just like, the next thing in this country, so is our rugged individualism, right? Like
Yeah.
we emphasize individualism so much to the point that we're not even allowed to talk about our salaries to each other or whatever. But like that's, by the way, to anyone listening, that's grossly illegal. Like you are allowed to do that. If they fire you for doing that, get a good lawyer because you're going to get a lot of money because it's not we, but they tell us, like you got to step on the heads of whoever you got to get on top. And like it, we don't do this together. It's not community care. It's not collectivistic. It's you are the one that's going to be the next billionaire, the next, and the next Elon, and make sure that you step on whoever that is to get you there. So yeah, it's
And another thing too is that we've been trained to weaponize the word socialist
yeah.
or cat or communist or Marxist or anything, and they'll now they tie all of them together because ignorance, right? That's the
Yep.
answer, because you don't even know what it is. If somebody, I'll just say a close family member of mine and Michelle's would use that as a buzzword. Oh, socialist, socialist. I'd be like, oh, what socialist?
Yeah.
Oh, well, Joe Biden socialist. I'm like, No, dude, that guy makes so much money. Are you kidding me? Any other country, he's right wing. What are you talking
Yeah,
about?
he's like a
And
moderate conservative.
right. I'm like, what are you talking about? And they don't, it's the same as the word woke. It weaponizes something that is good to make it sound bad. And then you get conditioned to make a boogeyman out of socialists when you realize it's not what you think. Well, how come no socialist country has ever worked? I'll tell you why, because we go in there and destroy them
We
so
fuck it all up.
capitalism goes. Like, are you dumb? Like, just crack a book. And we've been so conditioned to blindly follow things that we do not know. They're just buzzwords. And if you can insult someone by saying, "Oh, you fucking socialist," or "you owe this," or whatever, then you go, "Hey man, like if you worked for a company and that company was like, 'Hey, I'm gonna give you stock in this company,' would you be stoked?" Absolutely. Then you're a fucking socialist. Like, okay, so you, the same people, right? Like, "Oh, Blue Lives Matter, fuck socialist." That is a social program. Police officers, firemen, your Social Security boomers, that is a socialist program. Like, it gets me so fired up because, like, honestly, like, I just get so excitable about this because of people not knowing what they're talking about and talking out of both sides of their mouth because we've been conditioned to.
Yep, exactly. Again, the system is working as exactly as it is designed to, you know, is that we need willful ignorance to be able to continue the broken system the way that it is, you know. I was talking to someone the other day, just a random stranger, and we were, you know, kind of talking about like he was happy that what Biden did something about I forget. He did something about money or something, and just something recently, and I was like, yeah, is this a good thing or is it a performative act, right? Because we've been waiting too long for this shit to change, and like he could actually change all of this, but he's deciding to just do this little thing so that we're like, oh, you're the greatest guy
Trickle, trickle,
alive.
trickle.
Exactly, you know.
Here's the
And
carrot.
you know, we're just talking about it, and I'm like, honestly, I'm well past the point of let's be happy and thank you for the little tiny change. And I'm like, we need to just burn it all down. I'm right waiting for the revolution. And the guy's like, you know, it's just gonna be too violent and too bad if the revolution happens. And I was like, when has anything ever happened, you know, of notable change without a revolution? Like, yeah, there's
Or it
already
hurting.
violence happening. Like,
Right.
do you know that you're, and this is a guy that then tells me that he was homeless for 3 years because they didn't pay. He's a veteran and he's homeless for 3 years because they didn't pay him enough and all this stuff. And I'm like, there's the violence. You're already experiencing it, you
You're
know? Like, it can't get any worse than you being homeless for no reason other than they wouldn't pay you what you deserve to be paid and didn't get you the care that you needed after you came back from your tours.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm optimistically cautiously optimistic because the generations that are younger than us, they're not fucking around. And
No.
they're hitting the polls 2024 and so on and so forth. And they're a lot more compassionate because our generation instilled in that. So generation after generation after generation is turning left. They're making a left turn. And so that's why you see so many voting laws going into place in really right-wing places because their policies aren't popular. Look at everywhere that has had any kind of elections around abortion in the reddest states. They're getting shut down because the idea isn't popular. So what can you do? You stop people. You hear him now saying, "Oh, people under 25 shouldn't be able to vote." Dude, what? Of course, because
Because
that's
those
the
people are
people.
not going to vote the
And
way you want them
they're not, and that's why
to.
you also see people like Ron DeFascist in Florida that are banning books to keep people stupid so that we don't learn about actual history. We are banning books. Like, tell me you're fascist without telling me you're fascist. Like, that's what it is. And so in my opinion, and reading enough books on the subject at hand is that we're making a hard, as a country, we're going, I wouldn't say hard left, but we're going left with a lot of politicians, like Mitch McConnell, who just freezes up, or the other chick that's doesn't know where she's at. What's her name?
Marjorie Taylor Greene. Oh,
she's just, yeah, Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Lauren Boebert knows what whatever.
Crazy people, but yeah. I'm speaking specifically to the old people that do, that are making decisions that's going to affect generation out of generation, and they don't even know where they're at. Biden being one of them. And just so the listeners listening to this understand, I'm not a Biden supporter. I'll never idolize a politician. I hate the government equally. It doesn't, I'm not a supporter. You'll never see a bumper sticker or a flag or a hat on me for a politician. It will never happen because none of them give a fuck about us. None of them do. So even the ones on the left, they're just, they're playing off a different emotion, a compassionate emotion rather than a greedy, hateful emotion on the right. That's the only difference, and none of them deliver. But point that I'm trying to make before I get, this stuff gets me fired up, and I love you, Tara, for letting us have this conversation. But my thought is that we are turning left, and the far right sees that. They do not have any kind of popular policy. Well, they don't even have policy. There's nothing there. It's just a big void. So they're going to do everything they can to, as a Hail Mary, like, okay, we're going to ban books. We're going to, do the abortion thing. We're going to stop anything that helps pay off college.
They just took out psychology. They just banned psychology, AP psychology in their schools. It's like, okay. And we don't want to even learn about the human. are humans, but we don't want to learn about it. Yeah.
It's a latch ditch effort to put into laws, the last laws that they'll actually be able to put in, because, again, this isn't a prediction, it's just an opinion, is that 2024, it's going to be a big change. There's a lot of younger people that are going for senator seats and all of that stuff, that it's just going, things are going to change one way. Either Trump's going to come back into office and we're going to turn into a fascist country, guarantee, or he doesn't. Biden still, he either dies because he's old as fuck, and Kamala Harris, who is still, I'm not a fan of any of them, just to be clear. I don't like any of them, but there's going to be a change over the next 10 years that, in my opinion, either go extremely far right or more left. I don't think we'll ever be extremely, we're not going to be a Scandinavian country, but we might be able to get some different options for healthcare. I'm one of those extreme leftists that think that if you have a child with leukemia, you shouldn't have to go bankrupt. One of those crazy leftists.
Weird. Is ridiculous.
The extreme ones that think that if you have two full-time jobs, you shouldn't have to live in your car. One of those nutbags.
Yeah, you're a nutbag. You're just so woke. I don't even know. But what? It's interesting because this kind of, in my head, this is tying together of exactly what we've been talking about of the boomer generation, because, the far right, it just tends to be this way. The far right and the conservatives tend to be of that generation, a big chunk of them, although it spans all generations. Mm-hmm. But again, you think about it, they're restricting us so much and oppressing us so much with all of these laws. What happens psychologically? What happens when you hit the dog over and over and over and over again? It's going to bite you eventually. And that's exactly what we're seeing, is go ahead, keep hitting us with these laws, keep oppressing us, keep keeping us down. The only answer is going to have to be an insane revolution.
Sure.
That we're just, we can't take it anymore. You can't keep us down, because we actually, are existing, breathing human beings that actually have feelings and emotions and not ignorance around things. So we're going to clap back, and it's going to be in a big way, and good thing y'all will be dead by that time. But it's got to take a left. It
Well,
is.
it is. And I think that there's a phrase that's new to me that I like to use any opportunity that I can. It's like with the abortion thing, with Roe versus Wade being overturned, it's the dog that caught the car. So they got what they want. Now that small block of people, because it's not popular, don't need to be, people vote against the things that they don't, or I'm sorry, people vote, how does this work?
Like
Or how
for
does
the
this
things that do not benefit them, like they're
right
voting against their own benefit.
And they vote, they, what is it like, so people would vote to get rid of abortion, so they would vote against Roe versus Wade. Now that they got that, they're not voting for it anymore, and the people that got that taken away from them, now they're voting. So that's what I'm saying, that small demographic of people, that being the dog, caught the car. Okay, you caught it. Now what's the next thing? Oh, trans people? You think they should be exterminated? Like, it just gets more and more extreme and less popular. So that's the reason when you say revolution, I think that people don't understand that a revolution doesn't have to look like the black bloc. It's not everyone with black hoodies and black masks over their face that are going and throwing Molotov cocktails through corporation windows. That's it's not Fight Club at the end scene. Like, that's not how everything goes down. That's the front line, and that's the people, you know, that there's going to be those people,
There's
sure,
a time and a place for those
but
people too, you know, but yeah, but it's not everything.
yeah, there's people that need to be there to organize. And that's the reason why I think the right wing went away from overusing the term Antifa, because they realized that when you keep on saying Antifa as a bad thing, and you simply explain to them, like, you know, Antifa just means that you're anti-fascist. So if you're anti, let's just do basic math, right? So two negatives equal a positive. So you're pro-fascism? Whoa, like, remember World War II, where all of those American soldiers went to fight the fascists? Like, yeah, so you support veterans. And once you start breaking it down to logic, their head, you know, explodes, and it's logic doesn't work with many people on that side. So it's hard to have that conversation with a lot of people, but it just, I think it looks different than what people expect. It's not all marches and big explosive things. It's the revolution looks like people like you and me and younger people getting into office. Like, that's it's just people getting elected into positions, or it's people like you that are able to be a therapist to help people develop compassion and be able to develop the ability to think rationally, and to be able to dissect right-wing propaganda from actual events that are happening, or help people with their fear. This whole thing is based in fear, if you were to break it down to a single word.
100%.
And fear is a powerful thing to use against people and themselves.
And I think one of the biggest things, you know, it's like the revolution is already sort of happening because we got people like you and I that are talking about this stuff, that are doing things like the biggest thing you can do is live it. You know, you could talk about all you want, but also live it. So my whole thing is like I'm going to model as much as I can for how the world could be versus how it is now. And look, I'm still thriving. I'm still successful. I'm still whatever your definition of all of that is. And I'm still living a totally different way. How is that happening? Like, just at the very least, just question that. Like, how the hell is Tara doing this? You know, even when I talk about just the mental health field in general, like, this is one of my like big things right now is like, I'm very much into a deconstruction of all systems and the mental health field being one of them, the system itself, not the care of like how it looks in the room. You know, it's like I there's therapists and clients, kind of like what we were talking, I was talking to Michelle about earlier, you know, is there's therapists and clients in the room. And the idea is that therapist is expert and knows everything, and that, you know, client just has to like come in here and tell all the problems and whatever. But no, if you deconstruct all of that, pull it all down and pull all the power dynamics away, because on the other side of fear is empowerment, right? And so, you know, when you
Liberation.
Exactly, liberation and justice. And so
Right.
you got all these people operating under fear and making all of these very oppressive laws and rules and restricting us as much as they can. But on the other side of that is like, but I'm going to live in a world that's not scary. And it's scary to imagine what a, I don't know, anti-oppressive practice would look like, but I'm going to show you what it looks like, and I'll be
Right.
scared while I'm doing it. So you go ahead and live in your fear. And then just
Right.
kind of watch me and watch and see, like, this could be different. And that's how I feel like the revolution is happening, especially for our Gen Zers, are just like, I'm just gonna live the way that we imagine this world could be. And whether you like it or not, we're
But
just gonna live.
I think that a lot of fear goes away when you realize that everything can be taken away from you at a moment's notice. So
Yeah.
Gen X, who lived through, when they were, I don't know exactly what the year is, maybe this, but like Columbine, then, 9/11, then the recession, then, a billion other things, COVID, a billion school shootings, all of these things. It makes me feel like, as an entire generation of people that felt like me when I quit my job and started working for myself, I chose happiness over profit. This generation is like, I could die fucking tomorrow. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like, let's do something. Like, hey, like I seen my friend get shot at school. I'm going to, it could have been me. Like, I'm going to donate time and efforts to get some kind of regulation around guns. Like
Yep.
all of these things, like it's impossible for these people, like you said, a dog that keeps on getting hit is gonna fucking bite your ass. And
Yep.
that's what this generation is. They're like, I have nothing to lose. Well, I can't, we'll never ever be able to buy a home. So you think that I'm gonna just sit here? Like all of us are gonna, join this van life cult and be happy about it? Fuck that. We're
Right.
taking to the streets. And they're already ready to die because they think that they could
Because
at
they're
any
going to at
moment.
any
What are you
minute.
gonna, what are you, what are you gonna
Yeah.
do with a whole generation of people that are not scared to do shit and real
Right.
big shit? Like you see, in Tennessee, I don't know how closely you pay attention to this, but I'm gonna say it very loosely, but there was a whole debate going on, and this black younger guy, who was a senator, kept on just getting shut down by the Republicans. The whole upper level just starts, like they're all supporting him, and they just start
Justins,
so,
the Justins.
yes
Yeah,
yes
yeah,
and they
yeah,
just start screaming fascist at him, like these, and they're getting arrested. They don't give a shit. They're gonna block doors and they're gonna do things. Like they're my spirit animal. Like I'm proud of a generation that I am not, where boomers
yeah.
blame everything on us and think that we destroyed the whole planet. I'm like, these motherfuckers are going to save this
Yeah.
country. Like, that's what's going to save it. And I just hope that I get to see these guys do it. And like, there's people like on TikTok that I see or whatever. That's the first thing that I'm writing in their comments. Like, I'm proud of your generation. You're doing this. You're doing it. And like, it makes me stoked. Like, I get that gives me hope that, we might be able to elite. Maybe we don't turn completely left, but we're gonna get in the left lane,
Yep.
and at least it's progress into a more progressive world and moving forward, rather than an oppressive world that stays and has this romanticized version in their head of what America used to be when they weren't even around, so they don't know what it was like then. But we're told that it was nice,
Yep.
and
Yep.
the white man was on top, and that's what they want. So that's when America was great. Let's take it back to then,
Yep,
because it's
exactly. Yeah,
scary.
great for who?
Yeah,
Like,
exactly.
make America great for who?
Not
Yeah,
women,
not
not for
women,
gays, not for
not
blacks.
black folks.
Yeah,
No,
not
yep,
Asians,
exactly.
not
Nope.
anyone. It
Yeah.
was good for a very, very small amount of people. And
Yeah.
that's just not, that's not what I'm for. But it's it'll be exciting to see it. And it's been exciting to talk to you about this, because we're always supporting each other on these kind of rants. I try to keep this stuff off of my personal Facebook, but when somebody else writes something on theirs, I'm like, free game, motherfucker.
I'm here,
how about
yeah.
this? Like, I'll drop like the Bible verse that proves you wrong about your theory. Like, I am a Christian in the sense that I read my Bible. I went to Bible college. Like, I know what it actually said, not this like hateful cherry picking of the Bible that hateful pastors taught you. You know what I mean? Or whatever, or the ridiculous things that people will write out of context, I'll be able to research it enough. And I'll take the time, because this shit matters to me, to be like, oh no, in this amendment right here is what it said. Like, you're misreading the Constitution, or, you know, all of these things, or in this article, this, you know what I mean? It matters to me because I don't want to be ignorant.
Right.
And you, as a therapist,
we can't perpetuate ignorance, because that is what they are going off of. You know, like we've said several times today, is like, it's willful ignorance, and they don't want to do the work. So if I can just like bully you with this bullshit stuff, you know, my bullshit rhetoric, if I could just continue to bully you with it, then eventually you're going to say, fuck this, I'm out of here. Yeah. Or you're going to be someone like you,
that's going to
do research and come back and go, actually, no, you know,
yeah.
or me in the In-N-Out group that's going like, make that make sense for me. Like,
yeah,
I'm curious, make it make sense, you know?
Yeah.
And
that's question for you, Tara, as a therapist, do you sense when people start bettering their life or taking more time to educate themselves, that there's almost a sense of dread in the fact that two different things, the frustration with other people in their life that are not keeping up with the, you know, getting better themselves, mm-hmm. you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Healing mm-hmm. from their trauma and continuing to live in a world where they blame everyone them around them. The mm-hmm. frustration with that, then also the frustration of realizing the more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
Yep.
Because I'm going through both of those things very much. And that's what, you know, when I talk to my therapist, I get frustrated with everything that we've discussed, whether it's like, you know, the leftist stuff that we've discussed or the therapy stuff, because it both relates to this, is that I get frustrated as I progress in my own personal life that people aren't keeping up. And I find myself becoming more and more lonely in conversation because there's less and less people that I can have intellectual conversations with. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, it's frustrating. Like, why have a conversation if it's just, you're stupid? Like, that's the way I really think about it.
Yeah, yeah. No, and what you're going through and what you're feeling is very, very common. Like, that's just, that's what it is like, as we start to diverge from, you know, our old ways of thinking, from our, you know, communities that are also thinking this way, as we start to grow and change, there is a divergence that happens. And the further and further we get away from those people, the harder it is to kind of reconcile with, like, man, this is who I used to be, and I am not that anymore. And man, these people are still like this. And these are people that I love so much. And yet I can't make sense of that they treat people this way or see people this way. So it's this very difficult process. And then of course that other part of it of, like, I'm learning so much about myself and how things work or the world works, that I'm recognizing there's so much more that I don't know, that I think a little bit of hopelessness comes in there too, every once in a while, that we have to be careful of like, well, shit, will I ever know enough to be okay, to make sure that my family is okay, all of this. And then I think a lot of the process is really just trying to reconcile that. You know, I've seen that in my own life. You've described it in your own personal journey too, of like, what do we do with this divergence? And then from a therapeutic and from my particular orientation, which is very relational, is the further and further we move away from relationships and are more isolated from that, these are our groups, whether we agree with them or not, the more sick and dissatisfied and unfulfilled we become, because our healing happens together. Our healing happens in community. Our healing happens in our relationships. And if we're pulling ourselves out of our relationships to heal, then we're
Yeah.
not, you know, we're not going to heal.
I feel that there is a sense of isolationism when you do try to improve your life, because it's hard to go back when you've seen the greener grass on the other side. It's hard to go back, and you put the work in to achieve that greener grass. You watered that grass over and over and over, and you groomed it perfectly. It's hard to go back across the fence to a dirt lot that tumbleweeds are going, because you're like, I put all this work in. It's beautiful. Like, why would I leave this? So there's a lot of times that I have conversations with people that I haven't had conversations with in a long time, where we agreed on a lot of viewpoints, and it's hard in the sense where it's like, part of me is almost jealous, and they're what you were saying before, their willful ignorance. It's an easier life to be able to be like, I don't want to know the truth. I want to know what I want to know, and
Yeah,
that's good enough. As long
I
as
don't
you
want to be
tell me,
uncomfortable.
yeah, if I turn on a news channel that tells me what I want, it doesn't have to be news, it doesn't have to be actual events, but if they keep feeding my confirmation bias, I'm cool with that. Like, and there's court cases, right? There's court cases that just recently happened where Fox News admittedly said that they were lying to their audience and had to pay $750 million. And they won't lose a
Surrender
viewer.
to
As
it,
long as they tell these people what they want to hear, that's fine. That's baked into the cake. Like, oh, $750 million. We've been saving up for this. This is all right. Take that out of one account, pay this off, and we're going to keep running our program because there's an audience for it. And that is, it's difficult for me. And what I've realized and what's helped me, and hopefully this will help someone that has, that's listening, is in those kinds of situations, if you're going to grow, make one of the tasks in growing the ability to know how to switch conversations. Something that saved my relationship with my dad and other people is when there's a sense that we're going to get into politics, a really good skill that goes understated is to know how to flip your way out of that and continue a conversation going. And it could say, because I want to love my dad. I want to love my old friends. Like, I'm not going to let some stupid politicians tell me who can and can't be a part of the people that I love. I still love them. As long as they're not racist and they're not, actively, shooting homeless people, which a lot of them would be okay with. Just don't tell me about it and don't do it. Like, it's rough. Sometimes it's rough to be able to, but the good news is having conversations like this really recharge my battery, and I'll be able to go on and be able to enjoy. With that said, Tara, we're kind of winding things up. Do you have anything that you would like to maybe share with the audience, some advice or some words of wisdom that people might be able to take? Not to put you on the spot, if you don't have anything. Hey,
Words of wisdom.
right,
Let's
yeah,
see.
read us a poem that you just came up
Yeah,
with.
hold on.
No
Let me pull something
pressure,
out of my
no.
ass. No, honestly, like I really enjoyed the conversation today, and I think we did touch on a lot of stuff that we could totally dig even deeper in. And the biggest thing, I don't know if it's words of wisdom or advice or anything, but just to touch on how you were talking about, you know, just it feels very isolating to work so hard and to, you know, water your grass and like the grass is greener over here and water it. And that we lose contact with some of these like old groups. And it, how do you reconcile this to remember that there are lots of other people that are watering their grass too? And that you might be pulling away from this community, but you might be creating a new community over here, which is exactly what I experienced today with you, right? Like, yes, there's people in my life that I've had to let go of. There's people in my life that I refuse to let go of, and that I just have to, you know, manage that relationship. But what's helped me do that is to create and cultivate the communities that I am a part of, that I do align with, like we've done today. All we did was just to get together and connect, right? We just connect and communed, and here we are. And we've lit each other up, you know, we've empowered each other, and now we'll leave here going, I have another community member, like, there's my people here.
Right. And it's funny, it's funny that you say that, as far as, like, you know, time goes by and the person that, like, you start finding those people that also water their grass. And we're probably overusing that analogy, but it's going to work for this, the rest of this conversation. Then you leave the people that have the old dusty tumbleweed yard. And I'm really going through that now with putting together like a guest list for our wedding and kind of looking through all of my contacts and who I can think of. And I'm like, dude, in high school, in college, in my 20s, my mid 20s, and the beginning of my 30s, I was confident that this person wouldn't just be at my wedding, but also be a groomsman. Now I haven't talked to them in 5 years. Like, do I really want to spend $150 on just them, and then $150 bucks on their girlfriend or their, even their wife or husband that I've never met?
Yeah.
Do I want to spend $300 on some, like, and not to be materialistic, it's just that you start thinking different. It's like, and I've also made a lot of friends like yourself that we want to be there. Like, I'd rather, what am I going to say to someone that I haven't seen in 5 months and that we're making our rounds to thank everyone that's there? And I'm like, hey man, oh, you got two kids? I didn't know that. Cool. Talk to you in 10 years. Like, there's friends that you have for a season of your life or a chapter of your life for a reason. And all you can do is hope and pray that you got what the universe, God, Buddha, whoever put that person in your life to get from them. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you are also able to exchange their need that they needed from you at, in their chapter, in that chapter of their life. And it's just interesting that you said that, because I've been battling with that. Like, my birthday's on, or it's next week, but we're having like a get together on Sunday, and Michelle's all excited. We're having a party, and it's the majority of her family, a few people of my family. And she's like, are you excited? Are you, you know, did you invite your friends? Like, who's coming? I'm like, dude, like, I don't even have friends anymore. Yeah. Like, it honestly, like, I've been kind of depressed about it. And I start thinking, like, am I a shitty friend? Like, how come I invited all of my friends? Like, I send out this message to a bunch of people. They don't even like text back to tell me that they can't make it or they're not going to make it. And I'm like, what did I do wrong? Like, this sucks. And then she's like, but there's a lot of people that are going to be there that love you, honey. Yeah. Like, it's cool. Like, you're not, people don't hate you. People have lives. Like, people, things go. And then she reiterates, like, those people were there. You talk about them all the time and you have positive stories and they helped make you who you are. Like, that's
exactly.
good.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's just, it's wild, like, how people kind of come and go, and you do find your tribes. And also, like, what you were saying, I know I said, oh, okay, we're going to say goodbye and we're just keep on going. But like, there's people that you have in your life that you may think almost the opposite with. And there is enough value, there's enough good that outweighs the bad in those relationships that it's worth it to navigate the conversations or not, like, to mold your relationship with that person that can accommodate both of your guys' needs. And some don't. And then you're like, peace out. This is my boundary. You crossed it. See ya.
Yep.
No contact. I have no problem with that. I've had to do that recently, and it benefited my relationship with that person. And now we have boundaries, and I realized that it wasn't just them. A lot of it was me, and I knew how to push buttons. Like, they knew how to push buttons. We set up boundaries and things have been epic since. Awesome.
Exactly. Exactly. Good. And ultimately, I think that's what it comes down to, is like, the people that I want in my life and the people that are still in my life are the ones that are moving and growing with me, you know. And even like Michelle, for instance, it's been years since I've seen her. It's been months since we've talked, and still she's a person that will always be in my life, because we're both moving and progressing always, you know.
Always.
If you want to be stagnant and you want to stop, that's okay, but I'm most likely going to outgrow you.
Right.
And so it was fun while it lasted, and I love you for that always, and I got to keep moving.
Yeah.
You know, and so yeah, that's just where it is.
That's very, very similar to how I feel. And Yeah, you got to keep it moving. Speaking of which, we're going to move on from this this episode. Good news and bad news. The good news is, sorry, I'll start with the bad news. Bad news is we weren't able to get to every topic I think that both of us wanted to get to. The good news is, if you'll come back on, I would love to have you on
I'd
again.
love to,
And then
yeah.
probably again and again and again, because these conversations are really valuable to me and my growth and learning. And it's nice to have a therapist friend that is not my therapist. It's a whole different thing that I didn't realize I would appreciate so much before going into this conversation. I feel like I get to see the behind the scenes type of stuff, and that's always cool. So I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, I'd be happy to come again. This was very, very fun and exciting. And like we said, I'm like excited to go and live the rest of my night
Yeah,
here. And
there you
I'd be
go.
happy to come back again. So
Sure.
let's do
Absolutely.
it.
All right, Tara, I appreciate you very much. This is usually where I have people plug their social media and their businesses. I don't know if that's something that you would like to do. If you would, please do.
Sure. So you can find me. I split my personal and professional. So you can find me on Instagram at TMH Psychotherapy. You can find me at my website if you want. I'm at therapyforattachment.com. And that's where you can see all the cool stuff that I'm doing and living. I do have a TikTok, but it's kind of just me bullshitting around. So
Nah.
yeah, I'll save that for my
Yeah,
scrolling.
same here, same here. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you making it through another podcast. If you made it this far, thank you very much. Feel free to reach out via email, send me questions. If you think that there's someone in your life that might benefit from this podcast, please send it to them. And until next week, we'll talk to you guys later. All right, have a good one. Bye. All right, a quick word from our sponsor. Drum roll, please. Yep, you guessed it. We have no sponsor for this episode. So we might as well sponsor the episode for ourselves. If you're listening to this, go ahead and go over to Instagram and check out 21 grams underscore leather goods. Back to your unpaid, regular scheduled programming. Hey, what's up, guys? This is Dennis with 21 Gram Speaks. I'm super duper excited about this podcast. As you guys know, I'm somebody that struggles with mental health. I'm a huge advocate for seeking therapy, not just for people that struggle with mental health, but I think that everyone can benefit from seeing a therapist. And I'm super excited because I have my friend on who is a therapist. Her name is Tara. Tara, do you mind quickly kind of introducing yourself so the audience knows who you are and what you're about?
So I am Tara Holmquist. I'm a clinical psychologist licensed in both California and Wisconsin. Live in Wisconsin now. And yeah, I provide in individual therapy to adults from California and Wisconsin. And now I have just started doing autism and ADHD evaluations for adults that are kind of in their self-discovery process and exploring their identities. And I help support that a little bit. I get to be the psychologist that anoints them with their diagnosis and make them legit. And I happen to be Michelle's best friend. So
That's right. That's right. Prior to this, we were talking. It was awesome that you and Michelle got to catch up because it just, I mean, she's my fiance, so it's always so exciting for me, someone that loves her, to get so excited and so happy, and just to see her light up when she got to speak to you. And we got to talk about the wedding that's coming up, which is exciting for both of us and hopefully yourself included. And yeah, it's just, man, it just feels so cool. And that's how we know each other, which is, this is the first time really seeing each other face to face, but I've considered you a friend for a very long time. We've gone through some battles on Facebook towards people, and we've
We're out
always
here
had
on these
each other. Yeah,
Facebook
we've always had each other's backs. And you know, we're very like-minded in a lot of things, whether that's, our political views and our ideas about equality and how people should be treated. And that everyone deserves to be treated equal. And I knew immediately before even doing this, because I've wanted to have you on for a while. Michelle's always like, "Yeah, you should have Tara on. You should have Tara on. That'd be rad. You guys would just get along. I know it." Like, and I'm like, "I know. I get along with everybody. Like, that's not a problem." But it's really cool, and I just want to thank you. I appreciate you coming on, and I'm grateful that our first time to talk is going to be recorded and out there for the whole world to hear, which is
Let's see
rad.
what our brains want to come up with today.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the audience, just to know, these podcasts aren't scripted. So, I've done this is my third iteration on making podcast, and I wanted to do this a little bit for me, even if I have less people listening. This is an outlet for me, so things might get wild. And yeah, I don't give a shit. Like, I don't care if it just is what it is. This is an opportunity for me to talk about anything I want to. So this is going to be a great podcast. And the first thing I kind of wanted to bring up to you just mentioned this, is that you are the first person to inform someone when they're being diagnosed, whether that's with autism or whatever. What is that experience like? Do you have clients that are devastated? Do you feel like you have clients that are feel like relief, that they're like, "Oh, I thought I've had this forever, and now there's a medical professional behind it saying you do." It, like, that sense of like reassurance, or like, "Oh, this makes sense," type of thing. Like, what are the different reactions that you get?
Yeah, that's a great question because I get the range. It's such a variety of reactions and responses to it. And you know, it really depends on in which situation the diagnosis is coming. So for my clients that I see in therapy, these are folks that, you know, they came into therapy for whatever reasons they wanted to, and we work through that. And then through the course of their therapy, we start to kind of uncover some stuff. And to be honest, like autism is the big one, right? And that's the one, you know, you can have a depression diagnosis, anxiety, everyone does. If you don't have one, something's wrong with you. But it's the autism and the neurodivergence, like ADHD and OCD and things like that, that give me the biggest reaction. So if you're in therapy with me and we uncover this and I bring it up with you through the course of our therapy, like, hey, have we considered this? What would it be like to do some testing around this or even just explore this? This is what I'm experiencing from you. That can range. If somebody has already been feeling like, oh, you know what? I've been thinking about this for a long time, then I often get a sense of relief from them of like somebody else sees it and somebody else that knows it sees it and can see me in that way. So it's relieving. But I do have clients right now, one in particular who when I brought it up to them, it was a lot of tears, it was a lot of anger. They're still trying to figure it out. They're still trying to, you know, wrap their heads around it. They're working with a lot of their internalized ableism around it of like, man, autism as we know it means that I can't function in society and that I look a certain way and I don't feel that way. So we have to tread lightly. When I'm doing my evaluations, though, these are people that are coming to me for this reason.
Seeking
Like,
answers.
yeah, they actually want to know. I've felt this for a long, long time, and I kind of just want somebody to that knows it well to anoint, right? Anoint me with the diagnosis. So they, you know, they come and I call these kind of like peace of mind assessments, right? Of you already know who you are. You already know you've been feeling this way for a long time, and now you just need a professional to come in and go, yeah,
They don't
and
want to
be right on
feel
board about
like
it.
they're not crazy. That's what they want.
Exactly.
They just want a pass to be like, "Hey, you're not crazy." That's I could understand that. Like what you were saying, like prior, what you were just explaining, like people that come in and through conversation, you're like, "Oh, maybe you might want to explore these things." The more you get to know, as a therapist, you know that autism is a spectrum, right? So there's what I think the average person, and I understand that autism's on a spectrum, but I think the average person thinks that if you have autism, you're just going to be walking in circles, humming to yourself, or like, all of the like I don't know. I don't want to
The tropes
stereotype
around
things.
it,
Yeah, the
yeah.
tropes around it. Exactly. But I like, even myself, I feel like I may be on the spectrum just because of some of the mannerisms that I have. Like, whatever that is, my sense to want to collect stupid things, like, and collect things like pennies, not like things that are like, or just whatever it is, or how I want to eat the same lunch for 2 weeks straight, but then I'd never want to eat it again. Like, I get obsessed on just this one thing and how I do everything. Like, it's just, and I also, I'm not scared to find out that I'm on the spectrum. I'd be like, all right, put a tally mark to one more thing. Like, okay, whatever. Like, I just I think that there are tropes, and I think also, or there's a sense that like people are like, oh man, well, if I find out that I have autism, maybe it's gonna get worse, and I'm gonna go further on the spectrum, or all of a sudden, as soon as Tara tells me, then I'm going to have, like, then it's gonna be like released. It's gonna be the monster that gets released, and that's crazy.
And you're absolutely right. It's like I think what people fear the most is what we think we know about autism and about the spectrum in general. You know, is like the research out there, most of the research out there is on little white boys, right? It's just little white boys. And so, and they're not speaking, or they're not, you know, walking right when they're supposed to, and they're not, you know, going potty when they're supposed to, and all this stuff. And you start to see like these behavioral indicators that, you know, oh, he's, you know, lining up his cars, and he's, you know, he's echoing things after I say them. And like, he's just a weird, odd guy. He doesn't pick up on social cues. And so we pay attention to those things, and we really listen to how society talks about it, right? And like, society talks about it as if it's weird and othered. And ooh, it's just like, if you were more like me, you would be better, but you're weird. And so we hear that, and we're like, I don't want to be autistic. No. You know, but then just like you were talking about right now, is like, well, let's talk about some of your experiences and like your internal process about things. Like the way all autism is just like a hyperconnectivity in your brain. And so you process things and you experience your world differently. You know, you might have very, very heightened sensory issues. You might have very, very a very big need for sameness and routine. I am exactly like you. I've got my safe foods. I will eat the same exact thing in the same exact way for months and months and months. And then one day I'll be like, that's the grossest thing I've ever had in my life. You know?
It's so true, like how, and Michelle has to try to keep up with that. Like, every few months, like, I'll go grocery shopping with her, and we overall do not fit into the, like, what's the word, where the woman does all of the dishes and goes grocery shopping, and I mow the lawn, and like,
Your
we're
gender
not,
roles, right?
we don't do that. Sometimes we do, just out of, I'd rather be outside, she'd rather be inside, like, because of our personality types. But I'll go to the grocery store with her, and we'll walk down, and I think that she does this on purpose. Like, well, what do you want? Like, just what looks good to you right now. And I'll pick out whatever it is, and it's always whatever's the most convenient and quick, because I want to eat as fast as I can and get back to work. I don't
I don't have
want,
time
I
for this,
don't,
yeah.
yeah, I don't want lunchtime to be something that, like, I'm chopping up ingredients and I'm making something nice. I'm like, if I could just eat like a bar that has actual nutrition and kind of fills me up, then I'd be good, and I'd get back to work, and I'd be good. Which I want to dive into about my workaholism, and but yeah, that's just the way it is. And then I eat that for a week, and she's like, hey, you still on that? I'm like, yeah. She just replaces it, and I'm just like, and then one day I'm like, I don't know. And right now, because we're trying to lose weight, I've been working out a lot more because we're getting married, and I don't want to be a fat pile of shit for the photos afterwards. She already said, yes, we're married, who cares? Like, no, I'm just kidding. I just want to be healthy. I've spent the last 4 years, really, or 3 years, really focusing on my sobriety first and foremost, then my mental health. And I didn't want to be overwhelmed, so I wouldn't say I neglected, but I just wasn't focused on my physical health, like actually working out and eating right. And now it's time for me to put all of my passion and all of my addiction into health, because I just point my addiction to something and I'm like, okay, this is what I'm addicted to now. And so this is what I'm doing. And so a lot of fruit and a lot of like just protein, less carbs for lunch, and just like vegetables. Like right now I'm doing a lot of like cucumber salads where it's just cucumbers, tomatoes, onions, and Italian dressing. And I eat that and
Wonderful.
eat it as fast as I can, get back to work.
Exactly.
Just
That's the
power
other
through
thing
it.
too, though. That might be part of your neurodivergence too,
Oh,
is
yeah.
that like for me, like I don't have time to eat. Number one, I don't have time to eat, even though I have time to eat, because
Yeah.
we run our own businesses, so we could do
Right.
whatever we want. But also, it's I don't have time to eat, and I'm not very aware all the time of what's happening internally. So I can't always access whether I'm hungry or whether I'm thirsty or whether I even have to go to the bathroom. So like if it's almost ha it's almost like another chore to eat. Like it's another thing I have to do instead of like, hey, I'm hungry and it should be lunchtime now. I should eat. It's like, so if it's another chore for me, if it's another expectation of mine, then make it as quick as possible and as effortless as possible, because I don't want to spend time. So cheese quesadillas, please, all
It's
the time.
so relatable, because if I'm working and I'm in my shop, the only way I know that it's time for me to stop for lunch, before I wouldn't even stop for lunch, I would just power through. And I would only eat once a day at night. And Michelle would, like when you love someone and you know that they're not properly taking care of their body, but I just wouldn't notice it. And I'm like, but that's an hour or a half an hour that I'm not doing work, and I'm just starting a business. Like there's so much effort that goes into it, so I'll neglect that side of things. But because I'm on medication for my mental health, I have to take it midday. Before it was at 11, I switched it to 12 because of the heat in Southern California. So I'm trying to get that extra hour before it gets whatever.
Too
That's not the
much,
point. But
yeah.
like it could be 9 o'clock in the morning, and then 15 minutes later it's 12 o'clock. That much time goes before I look up and realize that the day has moved on. I don't, like you said, I don't feel hungry. I'll drink like coffee up until the point that I take lunch, but like it lasts me from 5 in the morning till 12 noon, and I'm just sipping on it because it's whatever. And
It's there
it's there.
because it's
Yeah,
there,
it's just there. And so I wouldn't even feel that. But if I take a day off, or if I do like half day on Sundays, the whole time I just want to snack on stuff. Like I'm like getting up from like the couch, or I'm going from one stupid task to the next stupid task, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if there's anything good in the pantry. Like, oh, now it's just fruit, which is a lot better. But I'm like, it's boredom, and it's like then that's all I think about.
And
So
then
weird.
also, like, to even get deeper into this, but like the emotional connection between food also,
Oh
and if we're
God,
in
yes.
still on, there's two different issues here. If we're still on this like this conception of neurodivergence, then like that makes sense to me, how you go about your day and how you eat and not eat. It's like boredom. There's no really connection to anything about food other than like, oh, what am I supposed to be doing right now? I guess eat, right? But then there's the other part where there is an emotional connection to it. It's like when I'm really needing comfort, when I'm really feeling stressed or, upset about something, and I just need comfort and I don't have access to someone to give me a hug right away or whatever, I'll go to the comfort foods. That's why they're called comfort foods, and so really paying attention to your relationship with food is, I mean, it's interesting, it's fun, and most of the time I can't be bothered with it. And I'm so grateful that Gerson, my partner, like also is the same way. He like for years now, it's the same exact thing for his lunch that makes grocery shopping so easy. I'm like, you need your bars, you need your carrots and your hummus, you need this and that. And it's like, oh, easy.
It's easy to
So,
budget that way too, because you know what it
yeah.
is. It's funny that you say the like relationship with food, because this is something I've been working with my therapist, because You know, when you're working on yourself, it's not like you just you're done. There's never done. You just realize you become more in tuned on the other things that you want to start working on. And one of them, as like I was prepping to get into being more conscious about my weight and all of that kind of stuff and getting it together, was my relationship with food naturally. And the idea of like if there's like my relationship with it in the sense of how I was raised with food. If we went out to dinner and there was anything left on the plate, then it was like you either eat it all or you're putting it in a doggy bag and you're not eating anything when we get home until you eat what I bought for you. I paid my money for you to be able to eat this. You're gonna eat it. And that's how it, you know, when you do that your whole life, then you think like, oh, well, there's still stuff on my plate. There's only a little bit. There's no sense in like scraping it off into the trash and then rinsing your plate or whatever. Then that like translates into like, well, there's a little bit more on the stove. Everyone's done eating. Do we really want to put it into containers that we're gonna
That we
say
can't
we're
throw it
gonna eat?
away.
Yeah, that we say we're gonna eat, but everyone knows we're not gonna eat it. Like, what's a couple more bites? Like, and this keeps going and going and going. And even like, I don't blame my parents because it's just I'm turning 40 years old. I got to get over the idea of blaming my parents for who I
For
am today.
everything.
Yeah, it's just, well, I just thought about this because we went out for my dad's birthday and him and my stepmom paid for it. And the whole time that I mean, he's like, well, you better finish that. You better finish that. Like, and I just had to be like, I will or I won't. Like, like, if I'm not hungry anymore, I'm not gonna, like, you know, like, and that's the difference in growing up to be able to set your boundaries and be like, I will if I want to, and if I don't, I won't. And that is what it, I'll pay for it. I'd
That's
rather
just
do
what it
that
is.
than get pestered by it.
That's exactly it. You know, it's just, and if my dad listens to this, he'll be happy to hear that, I'm no longer in the place where I'm blaming my parents for everything for
Oh,
who I am
God.
today. Although, you know, there's there's lots of stuff there that we could talk about, but it the same thing. And now I'm in a place where I kind of look back at my parents and the way that they do things, and I'm just like, okay, like I understand where that comes from, and it doesn't work for me. So this is not how I do it in my family. This is not how I raise my kids. You know, this is just okay, you know, and I think that's part of the healing work, right? That's gotta be because of your, you know, your focus on your mental health, your therapy, your sobriety even.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that
growth.
is part of the healing and the growth is I could spend the rest of my life blaming my parents for things. The fact that, oh, I did the best that I could. No, you didn't. Or this wouldn't have happened. This wouldn't have happened. I could have kept a tally mark. And I did that up until, in all honesty, about a year ago. Like completely switched over from like, okay, time for me to get over it. Like I need to, and I don't know if get over it is the right word because I don't know if there's trauma that you can always get over,
Get
but
over, get through.
because of those situations that happened to me, that doesn't have to control who I am or the how the rest of my life works. Like then you're a prisoner to things that happened 20, 30, sometimes 40, 50 years ago, and like then they win. And I don't mean like your parents, but those situations win, and you're not able to fulfill what your life should be.
Yeah, exactly. And like you're right, they win. And you know, why are you going to let things that you had no control over, you had no say in, you just had to participate in, why are you going to let those things run your life now when you do have the autonomy to live the way that you want to live? You know, it doesn't make any sense, and it's not beneficial to your growth or health or anything.
I think that the quickest way for me to find out if someone's life sucks is if they say that their life sucks. Most people that say, "Oh, my life is rad. I'm happy. Things are the best that they've ever been." It's their choice that it's that way. Like you have the choice. Some people just like being miserable. I was that person. There's a lyric from a song. I love Bright Eyes, and one of the lyrics is, sometimes it's just easier to sleep in the gutter. You get so used to living such a shitty life that when things go well, I talk to Michelle about this all the time. Like, when things go well, it's almost worse because you're waiting for the shoe to drop. Like, things have never been this good for this long. So then something really bad's about to happen. That's the scary part.
And like we, and that's part of the trauma, right? Is not being able to like lean into the good because we have lived our whole lives, and this is trauma. When you live your life in the fight or flight place, the survival mode, then you can't ever rest in that, right? If you're trying to make sure that you stay alive every moment of your life and you're surviving that, then everything, your senses are heightened, you're always on guard, you're always prepared, and you're waiting for that other shoe to drop. And the longer, it's kind of like earthquakes in California, right? It's
Oh
like the
God, I
longer we go
imagine.
without it, the bigger it's going to be,
Yeah,
you
there's all
know?
this
And
tension.
yeah, and that's exactly, you know, what happens in our body is that if we're not leaning into the good and just actually accepting that this is good right now and it might always be good, you know, it there's such a, I don't know, there's such a comfort that comes in actually feeling your cells rest and be in relief, you know, of like, man, this could be good and just that, you know?
The way that I look at it is if you, your first love, right? Perfect, everything is great, fantastic for 2 years. Things are fantastic. One day, even after having the best date that you guys ever went on, he or she says, "Hey, I've been cheating on you." You're like, "Oh my God, everything was so great." And then now it's the worst it's ever been. And then the next relationship, exactly the same thing happened. And then over and over, and you have 20 relationships where they all end on you being cheated. You're going to have such trust issues with the partner that comes along that might be perfect, that will never cheat on you. But you're not going to be able to experience that if you can't get over it and not blame the people that cheated on you for the relationship that you have now.
That's exactly right. That's, I mean, I was literally talking about this with a client today about this is like, if you are in a situation that, or a relationship that caused trauma for you, and that was a very traumatic relational experience, then every time you're in a situation that mimics that, a relationship that looks like that, you know, so, you know, this person was fucked over by their coworker, their business partner, you know? And so every time they're trying to build new relationships with business potential networking stuff, it they go into their trauma mode and they recreate that same relationship that they feared so much, you know? And it's like, you have to be different in this relationship. The situation will always be the same, but you have to go into this differently, and you have to give up this idea that everyone's going to be like this shithole business partner you had, you know? And that's growth.
I think one thing too that comes along when you're able to kind of release that trauma and you don't let it like Benedict your life is that you can stop thinking that you don't deserve a good life, which is where I was for a long time. Like, well, I expect something bad to happen next week because I deserve it. Like, I don't deserve like steady love. I don't deserve steady income or steady roof over my house or not having to worry about where my next meal is going to come or losing a job. I'm just saying a bunch of just negative things that you can get used to, and then you start convincing yourself the reason why these things happen to you is because you deserve them. But once you start working at getting your shit together, you realize, I deserve the good things that are I deserve a good relationship. Like, I deserve to be able to not have to worry about where my next meal is coming. Like, I did. So that idea of, and for me, it was a very slow process, something I'm still working on, going into getting married and going into, my living situation and all my business situation. Things are so good that I'm really starting to realize, like, well, I'm a good person. Like, I deserve these things. Like, I and the happiness that what that I've experienced over the last 3 years have subsided into joy, like long-term happiness, where it's not just like, oh, look at that rainbow. It's like, well, look at all of the weather. Like, even the rainy days, we need rain to grow fruit. Like without rain, there's no rainbow. If it's beautiful and sunny every single day, we're not going to appreciate it unless it rains every once in a while. Like,
yep.
Start looking at life differently when you start healing from your trauma.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it's like so much more than just a mind shift, but that's very important too, is to shift over your perspective on things, but also to learn to embody that and internalize that, you know, because,
yeah.
And you said, you know, it takes a long time and, you know, you're still having this process, but you know, you are almost 40 years old. So you've had 40 years of building a life one way. And then, you know, of course it's going to take some time to like shift perspective, because these are ingrained, wired things in our brains, in our cells. Like, this is who we are. And so, yeah, to shift that is not just a couple sessions of therapy, you know, even though insurance will only allow you to have like, you know, 8 sessions of therapy. Right. It's not, you know, we can't have embodied change if we're expecting things to happen in, you know, 2 sessions or whatever. It is a long process and it's a lifelong process, you know, because like you said earlier, once I get a good handle on this part of my life, then it opens me up to like work on this part of my life. And then, you know, just really work on this whole perception change in everything that I see, my entire worldview. You know, I mean, it even speaks about, and I know we'll probably get into this, but like even how I view the world and my politics and the way that I treat people is a result of how I was raised, because I was raised the opposite of that.
Right.
You know? And so it's like, oh, I watched this journey happen and unfold, and I'm excited that it's still continuing to unfold for me.
Right. Absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more. The more I've started to realize about myself, the more I have, I don't know, I feel like I've become more compassionate towards others and more empathetic. Like I don't know how true like being an empath is, but like I feel like if it is a real thing, I'm that dude. Like if I'm watching TV or a YouTube video and someone falls, like I feel it. Like if somebody falls off a skateboard and slams, I'm like, ah, like that like I can feel like the electricity through my body. Or if like we watch Intervention a lot, everyone that listens to this podcast knows I'm in recovery, I'm, you know, an addict and everything like that. So watching that, and once they go from like the pre-intervention to the intervention and they accept it and they're going to either detox or rehab right there, the look, the split second after they say okay or yes, I'll go, there's like this flood of fear that comes over me, because I know in that moment, the emotion that they're experiencing is a quarter relief, because they feel like finally, like I can give up the ghost. I can release this like off of my shoulders. The other one is fear. What happens if I fail? Like what happens if there's such an overwhelming feeling of fear that comes with that. And I think that goes back to how scary it is. Like your life changes. Once you decide you're going to get sober, that's the worst hangover you've ever had. That like the anxiety, the having to face the, whether it was a week long bender, a month long, or years and years of continuous drinking, drug use, you have to eventually go through all of those things again, relive the depression, relive the anxiety, the guilt. I'm 3 years sober and there's still things that will pop into my mind on a daily basis. And I'm like, oh my God, like I forgot about that. Like maybe it was when I was drunk and I was tattooing and I didn't do this one tattoo perfect, like 8 years ago. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, like that person still has that on their body. Like I should contact them and apologize. And like, and then I'm like, no, like what, you know what I mean? Like you constantly live through this fear. It's crazy. So I'm constantly feeling like, I can feel that kind of like the pain, not just physical, but emotional. when it comes to that.
Exactly. And just like side note, Dennis, like the empath is a real thing and it's a trait of autism.
Oh yeah. Of course it is.
So we're just doing a whole assessment, you know, throughout this entirety of this episode. That's perfect.
By the time we're done, I'm going to have a new diagnosis.
Yeah, that exactly. Like, I'm like, here's me anointing you.
Yeah. That sounds like every conversation I've ever had with a therapist. Like, I know I have the big five, the anxiety, the depression, the OCD, the PTSD, the ADHD, like throw one on there, throw it on the dog pile. I'm into it. I'm totally into it. I did want to bring up because I know people that listen to this, because people reach out to me that listen to this podcast, and a lot of them are recovering addicts, and mental health and addiction are very, very close. They're close cousins, if not brother and sister. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there could be addiction without mental health? And how much do you think that they play into each other?
That's a great question. And I don't even think they're brother and sister. I think they're two sides of the same coin, you know, And also, you know, we might have to talk about like my perception of addiction, your experience with addiction, and how I treat it, because I very much come from a harm reduction place, you know, of that we're addicted to the things that we're an addiction is just our coping. Like we're just trying to cope with the, you know, awfulness of life, sometimes the struggle of life. And we've decided to do that with whatever our drug of choice is, whatever our thing that we've become addicted to. So if you are finding yourself addicted to something or, you know, dependent on something, then obviously that tells me that your mental health isn't doing well, that there's something happening. There's most likely trauma. 99.9% of the time there's trauma going on that you're trying to cope with.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not even like in relationship to each other. They are the same. They're one and the same. They're just kind of interwoven, that like, you have to be working on your mental health if you're going to be tackling your addiction.
100%.
You have to be working on your addiction if you're going to be focusing on your mental health.
Yeah.
Those two things have to exist together.
Well, absolutely. I couldn't imagine like really trying hard to work at your recovery as an addict. I'm still an addict. I'm just, I switched my addiction from drugs and alcohol to work to addicted. I mean, I drink water in a way that's an addict. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like if I'm going to drink something, I just pound it. Like I just, that's me. But if you're going to work on addressing your addiction, that you're going to have to work on your mental health. And if you're trying to, if you're trying to get sober, and then if you're trying to figure out shit about your mental health and you're an addict, your therapist is going to bring up the fact that you drink every single night, or, well, do you binge drink? Like you're depressed and you're using a depressant. Well, no shit. Like, let's address that. Like that, that's something that, like, you know, that's kind of a no brainer. And so to have them, I think that, you know, when we watch Intervention, it gets to, real quick at the beginning of the show, me and Michelle always be like, what's their trauma? Because no matter what, it's either they were sexually abused, or dad left when they were young, mom left when they were young, their parents fought because they were addicts, or PTSD from going to war, all of these things. Mm-hmm. It's like, but there's never not trauma, guaranteed. There's not an episode that's just like, oh yeah, my parents were cool. My pastor was cool. He never touched me. Whatever it was. Like, I went to war, but I wasn't affected by that. There's never those kinds of situations. It just doesn't play out that way. So they have to be linked together.
They have to be. You're absolutely right. And then even like, it's always going to be trauma. And that's how I engage it with my clients and in my work, is that like, let's work on the trauma. Right now you're just coping, and your coping isn't working anymore. That's why you have an addiction, right? Is like, what are you coping with? Like, let's talk about that. And, you know, you named, you know, the classic like traumatic events that have happened. You know, you've got parents fighting, or you've got, you know, war that you're in, and all this. And a lot of people don't think of like generational trauma, relational trauma, childhood neglect is
Yeah.
trauma, you know? So you could sit there and say, no, I don't have any sexual abuse. I don't have any physical abuse. My parents didn't hit me. They didn't drink. They didn't do any of these things, but you know, they didn't attend to my emotional needs ever.
Right.
You know, like when I would fall off my bike and get hurt, my dad would say, get back
Put
up.
some dirt
You
in it.
know,
Yeah.
it's why are you
Rub some
crying?
dirt in
Right.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a dude, then it's like, boys don't cry. You don't cry.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, nurturing that all humans have emotions and that little kids especially are learning to understand their emotions. So,
Right.
you know, there's tons of neglect that happens. And that's what I see most often. Again, that's what I specialize in, is like relational trauma. So how did prolonged set of behaviors and ways of doing things impact you and how you view the world and how you engage in your relationships as an adult? You know, it's
Right.
like, no, nothing bad happened to me except for, you know, like nobody paid
All of the
attention to
bad,
me.
yeah, all of the bad shit. Nothing bad happened to me except all the bad shit. You know, it leads me to something that I want to discuss with you when we get back to the from the break. We're going to take a break real quick. Is our parents' generation and how they dealt with mental health and why they're so stubborn to seek help from it. And I'm sure some of your clients are in that boomer. And I say boomer in this case is not a negative. It's just the baby boomer
It's
generation.
boomers.
Yeah, it's the boomers, right? No different than millennial, whatever. But like, I'm sure some clients are, whatever percentage. But I would just like to get your take on that generation and mental health as a whole. And I mean, we'll probably make fun of boomers a little bit, but it's all love, you know. That's our parents' generation, and they give us a hard time about being entitled and lazy, and you know, why do you have student debt? Well, things aren't the same, but I'd rather get into it on the thing. But we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back, guys.